Time is 8:13. A very good morning. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem 101.9 Chai FM. As promised, we joined by Outa. Very, very good morning officially. Welcome. And, well done for the incredible, incredible amount of work that you guys are doing and have done and continue to do. You know, I think that, certainly when I look at the, look back over the couple of years, there are a couple of individuals and there are a couple of organizations that stand out with, and without them, I believe that we wouldn't be in the position that we are today, which is far from perfect, but at least on the right track towards, towards rooting out corruption and out of definitely being one of those organizations that, that just were relentless in their fight. Tell us how, give us a bit of a history. Where did this all come from?
Well, thank you, Howard, and thank you for that. And while we appreciate what you're saying, it should be said that we can't do what we do, of course, without the people and the communities that support us. So thank you to all of your listeners and all who support us. So OUTA was started back in 2012, and it started as a civil activist movement tackling an irrational policy in the form of the ETOLs, the Gauteng Freeway Improvement Project. And Wayne Duvenage, who at that time was coming from Avis, where he was the CEO, saw that this was an irrational policy. There hadn't been public participation, consultation, and there were a number of flaws.
Right.
And so went from the boardroom and the corporate sphere into the world of activism. And together with a great team of people, launched this, challenge to the ETOLs. But obviously from that then, and the activism that emerged from that, resulted in a number of other important projects that we've undertaken over the years.
So, but did it start sort of officially, or was it just, you know, I'm always fascinated how these organizations actually start, because, you know, it's somebody who gets passionate about saying, look, you know, this is unacceptable, and then, you know, they put out a couple of things. Like it just did it grow organically, or did someone sit down and say, right, we are going to form an organization and this is what we're going to do?
Well, it's a great question, because it's a very interesting and somewhat unique evolution of an organization. So when it started, again, it started as concerned individuals, predominantly from business at the beginning, who were concerned, you know, obviously had these worries about the way that this would impact on the infrastructure in Gauteng. But because it then required a legal approach, there had to be an incorporation of some form.
Right. So
initially it was the opposition to Urban Tolling Alliance, OUTA, and that was important so they could actually have this legal recourse. But then very shortly thereafter changed to the, to OUTA now, which is Organization on Doing Tax Abuse, because again of the
broader
mandate.
Because it's much broader.
Yeah.
Right. So it started off quite specific and then moved out, accordingly.
Yeah.
All right. So before, I actually don't want to overfocus on ETOLs, because what I'm finding is that just anecdotally, and I don't know if you have that same issues, is OUTA and ETOLs are very closely associated, yes, because of the success there. Yes. But the fact is that it's so much broader than that. So what I want to do is ask you where we are with ETOLs, understand that, and then actually spend a few moments rather looking at some of the other things that you're involved with, if that makes sense to you as a structure.
Yes,
all right. So, where are we today with ETOLs? I'm still getting accounts. I'm getting threatening SMSs. What do I do with them?
Well, yes, no, it's a losing battle being fought, from the other side in this instance. So with ETOLs, what OUTA has done is we've defended those who have been issued summons. And to date, we've had 1,234, individuals who've approached us, that we defend under our defense umbrella. Most of those in magistrate court, a few in the high court. And, you know, the point is that, someone else sees this, I'm sure, as a losing battle. In order for there to be a functional tolling system, you need at least 75% compliance.
Right.
There's been 25% at best compliance.
Oh, so it's
moribund. Yeah, you don't push Gauteng around. We know how to stand up for our rights.
But it's so interesting, because Gauteng has obviously just realized
we
this
all
is
said no.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Arrest a lot of us?
We'll
go
take
on,
so much, but no more.
Absolutely, and it's the power of the collective. The collective. It's the power of activism. It's the power of the people, and that's what OUTA has been privileged to be part of. And so we've seen this. You know, again, we're not propagating a tax revolt here.
Well, I was just going to say, I want to distinguish that because I don't want to, you know, I don't, obviously it's dangerous for everyone to decide, okay, you know, I'm not paying whatever it is and then we no longer pay it. Because we can't just decide. We're meant to have a structure and systems and courts and a judiciary actually that tests these things along the way.
Yes.
So you're not advocating that we just stop paying taxes?
No, no, certainly not. I mean, it's important. We are a developmental state. We are a developing country. We need to have the revenue come in to take care of our communities across the board. But in this instance, there is a principle of fairness. It's natural justice. If you have an irrational policy like e-tolls, it differentially affects those at the margins. If you're reliant on those routes going to and from work, and you have very little expendable income, and it gets absorbed into this, you know, this really bizarre system, it's going to hurt you in an unfair way. And so we driving this on the principles of fairness, and it's the right thing to do.
Heinrich, can I just ask, like, as someone who receives these bills from e-tolls, I tear them up and put them in the bin, okay? But that's because I'm secure in the knowledge that I'm an outer member. So if you aren't an outer member, you don't get that legal assistance that outer would give me, for example, if they summons me. Is that right?
No, in fact.
Or can you come to outer and say, "Hey, I'm in trouble"?
Oh no, you don't have to be an outer supporter for us to obviously engage
to
with
your
you.
Rescue. Lovely.
It's important that it's understood that we are a public benefit organization, so we're open to everybody. It's important if you do get a summons to contact us.
Yes.
Because we do have this defense umbrella. So don't ignore summons.
Okay.
There's a difference between those bills
and a
summons.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That you do need some legal recourse in terms of your defense.
Right.
But we're a public benefit organization.
So how do you then decide which things to take on? I mean, I've got a pet peeve about TV licenses. It hurts me beyond words to have to pay a TV license. Is, you know, does Alta sit down and do you have a committee or do you have a way in which you say, okay, you know what, this is unjust. You know, most people are paying privately for all sorts of other things. This TV license thing doesn't work, especially with what's gone on at the SABC. Or do you say, you know what, we're not going there, we're going to focus our energy on something else?
Well, Howard, you know, we would love to tackle all of these irrational policies, but we have obviously capacity limitations. We are a non-profit organization, and we therefore have to prioritize and focus. So we've focused our work largely around areas such as state capture, and energy, water and environment, and then transport. We do have some work around SABC communications and a special projects portfolio, but we're limiting that now and focusing more on education. So we've unfortunately, given our restraints, had to focus on these areas.
You know, and Heinrich, it means, you know, the team is 50 of you, is that right?
That's right.
50 of you and a big team of lawyers in amongst them. So they're your own lawyers, they're on your payroll, you've got advocates that are just astounding, like my jaw drops when I hear any one of them speak. And that's all funded by direct debits, right? By people like me who pay you $100 a month.
Yes, well, 95% of our funding comes from individuals and small businesses who give us donations. They support us.
I want to talk about that. I am going to get to that because I would love to know for people how to become a supporter of Outer. I think that is important. Rami says, Howard, rent from us at Telljoy. We'll pay your TV license. A shameless plug there.
I'll line up for that.
You know what? I respect that. Never lose an opportunity. That is very funny. All right, time is 8:22. Any questions that you've always wanted to know but were too afraid to ask? 34519 or 0618951019. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem on 101.9 Chai FM. We are speaking with Heinrich Wolnick from Outer and understanding some of the things that they are involved with. Dudu Mieni.
Yes.
Yes.
Our favorite son.
Right, right. Do you have a big poster of her at the outer offices?
There's a few posters.
I'm going to have to reserve my right here to think
All right. Yeah. Give us the background here.
Well, you know, there's a long history, and we know the association with our former president. And the number of allegations that have been made against her. So we've undertaken a fairly large lawsuit to be declared a delinquent director in terms of her engagement with the SAA board. That's an ongoing process. It's unfolding. We're hoping to have, some resolution towards the end of the year. But the point is that, you know, it comes back to the central theme that we have as out is that we want to move into an age of accountability. So when you have somebody, like Dudumayeni, with all of these allegations hanging over her, we then need to, ensure that all of this is exposed and that there is some proper, justice, however that may be carried out, that people just don't simply get away with things.
So, if she's declared a delinquent director, she can't ever sit on a board again.
Well, for a finite period of time.
Right.
But it's the point that would have been made.
Yes.
And I think that's the point. We need precedent. And beyond Dudumayeni, I think we all have the same sort of need to see somebody who is in a position of power, who has done wrong by the public through corruption, be held to account, to actually see jail time, somebody.
Yes.
And so we will continue as outer on this quest to see justice because it proves that point, that you can't get away with this.
Do you find, is there pushback? Is there negative? I mean, there must be a tremendous amount of pushback that you guys receive from, because of the job that you're doing. And that must make things very difficult for you personally.
There is. I mean, it's not an easy space to work in, but we are really powered by the people. When we do face these challenges, we just, speak to supporter and it just kind of puts wind in our sails again.
You know, what's interesting is organizations like Outer, really have got to keep such a very clear, unbiased, and where I'm going with this is I think of an organization like AfriForum, and I don't want you to comment on it. Tanya, you and I can comment. We'll say.
I would love to say AfriForum.
The point is that as an organization, they had so much potential.
And
time and time again, they've indicated that their focus isn't really about the people of South Africa, but it's about very, very specific issues.
Yeah.
And as I say, Henrik, I don't want you to comment deliberately because it's another organization. I don't think it's fair to ask you to do that. But what I want to ask you is about Outer. How do you keep a balanced, and especially because it is political. We are, Dudumayeni is embroiled in politics. Mm-hmm. So it must be a very difficult thing to do.
It is difficult, but I mean, we as an organization, we centered around our vision, and our vision is really to see, as a point of departure, a prosperous South Africa and a deep love for our constitution. So, we reflect on that, and that's what drives us. We want to see the realization of the principles of a constitution, but we realize that requires a country that's free of maladministration, free of corruption. And so by keeping focused on that as the main thing, it helps us to maintain neutrality. But also if I can just add, Howard, in terms of the functioning of Outer, you spoke earlier about it not just being about e-tolls. We've had about 117 projects over a 3-year period covering energy, as I said, state capture, all these different portfolios. We've got a local government, new division that's emerging now, looking at the collapse of municipalities and how to deal with that. We've got a parliamentary office. We've got a team down in near parliament
who engaged with this is all since 2012.
Yes. It's grown. It's just hit on, I think, on that activism that's in our society, and it's just allowed us to grow.
Yeah, well, I think within the Zuma period, I actually wrote one of the articles that I wrote, it was in the heart of Zuma, that those of us that sort of lived through the 80s and 90s at universities, it's time to dust off our Doc Martens because,
yes.
There was standard activist.
Standard yes,
that's how you knew if there was a protest that day. But the point is that it's almost time to figuratively dust off your Doc Martens because we're not going to get change unless there's activism. And it's become a lot more sophisticated through organizations like ours and through yourselves. Time is 8:35. I'm Howard Feldman. This is Your Morning Mayhem 101.9 Chai FM. Joining us in studio, Tanya Curry, of course, and Outer Executive Director Heinrich Vollmink. Now, you were talking just during the song about the Gupta leaks. Give us some information around this.
Yes, so we were given the Gupta leaks, the actual hard drive.
Wow. Yeah.
And we were very careful how we've handled that. So that's.
But can I just ask you? Sure. I mean, obviously you'll talk. So I'm going to ask questions. You can answer what you choose to answer. But like, how does something like that get delivered? No, I'm serious, because we're not meant to know where it came from. So, like, do you arrive at the office one day
and there's a parcel?
It's usually preceded by some kind of phone call that then causes you immediate perspiration, and then things are handed over incognito. And then you've got to be careful, of course, how you handle that. So we've been very careful. I mean, in terms of having it offshore and then accessing it remotely. But we've developed a very sophisticated system of extracting data from that.
Right.
Because obviously holding onto it would have put us at risk, but we need to access the data.
Right.
So,
if you were sitting with it here in South Africa, that could have been confiscated. Someone could have found a way of saying legally you're not entitled to it.
Well,
is that why?
But there's also the real risk to the organization.
Criminality.
Well, just having that and putting staff at risk by
right,
having
right,
it
that's
in proximity.
What I mean. Okay. Yeah.
So we do obviously have access to it, and what we found is that there are 11 million pieces of data files in the Gupta leaks. We've only gone through a couple of 100,000. We haven't plumbed the depth of it.
Let me stop you there. Is Zanati, for my birthday?
Yes.
I want just one day with these Gupta leaks.
Me too.
It's Father's Day.
Yeah.
There you go.
Because we were talking. So there's the other thing, like lock me in an exclusive books for a night. Happy with that. We were talking about Donald Trump. What do you give that guy? So now if we just Gupta, day with a Gupta leaks is good, you know, that kind of thing. I'm just putting it out there. All right.
It's actually like going down a rabbit hole, because you just stop and you just get all these files. So we use that obviously to shape No Room to Hide, which was a report that we presented to Parliament. We've had now not 10, but 11. We have the 11th submission to the State Inquiry, the Zondo Commission. A lot of that information coming from the Gupta leaks, looking at areas such as PRASA, Transnet. I mean, it's a range of areas. And it is quite shocking what you see in there. And it fills you with, a righteous indignation, because that's public funds that have been squandered.
Well, that's the whole point of this, isn't it? Is that somebody can live any life they want to live if they've earned the money. Mm. No one's judging anyone for that, but this isn't their money.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, this is very important, is that there's a material impact on corruption. So, you know, my training is, I'm a physician by training. And so I can tell you, when you have a hospital that's run out of medicines because there's been some corruption, it has a real impact on people's lives.
Of course it does.
If you're in a school and you run out of textbooks because of, again, maladministration, it has a material impact on future generations.
Right.
So it's not a victim-centered crime.
So some of the research that I've done, and I've done some, I do a fair amount of talks on various things. One of them is ethics in the workplace, because South Africans are struggling with it, as is everybody. And one of the biggest influences on the moral and ethical standards of any group of people are other people around you. Mm. So South Africans, unfortunately, have slipped quite a bit, as you well know, because we've lived in an environment and somehow that says, well, if they can do it, then why do I
Absolutely.
Need to worry about not speeding? You know, at least I'm not stealing billions. Mm. That said, the other bit of research that I've done on it shows us that essentially, we all want to be good people. Nobody wakes up in the morning one day and says, from Wednesday, I'm going to be a Gupta. You know, it's an incremental process. And we generally, and Dan Ariely, who's done a lot of analysis on this, shows that we cheat until we don't feel good about ourselves, and then we pull back. We all cheat a little bit. We all lie a little bit. But it's until our own self-image of who we want to be starts to conflict, to chafe against that, and then we pull it back. Once we've passed that completely, if a form of cognitive dissonance kicks in, and we almost have to justify our own thievery and our own terrible behavior. What is your experience with some of the characters, these list of characters that have benefited so outrageously from corruption? Do you think that they know and accept that what they've done is wrong, or do you think that they have employed a form of cognitive dissonance to justify their behavior?
No, I think that's a great question. I think it's important to firstly say that we're talking about a vanishingly small proportion of our population. Mm. Most South Africans are fundamentally good people.
I believe that.
And you know, our history proves that. We've overcome such obstacles because of that. And so we are a good society, and I will always maintain that. But you've got this minority of individuals. And I think there has been some cauterization of the conscience. I mean, you have to have cauterization. You have to have some.
It's a good way of putting it, actually. I like that. Yeah. You know, great phrase. I'm going to quote you on that.
And a, and a lack of empathy that comes with that, which is disconcerting. But we have the responsibility to ensure that the damage that's caused from that is limited, which is why we do what we do.
But to answer the question, do you think that those, even that small percentage that is involved, has been involved, the, and I'm going to say the name, the Dudu Mayenis, the ACEs, do you think that when they switch off the light at night to go to sleep, do you think, and it's speculation, I'm just asking a view, do you think that they actually recognize that they've been corrupt?
Well, you know, it's a very difficult question.
I understand.
I mean, my individual kind of opinion on this is that there's always space for restoration, restorative justice. I hope that's naive. I know.
Yeah.
And so you know, there is that element, but ultimately there has to be some kind of justice for the victims of their actions.
Oh, no question. Mm.
And so whether or not they can limit their own behavior, we have to, as a collective, ensure that, in fact, it doesn't go any further.
Tanya, you mentioned a little bit earlier about being a member. Is that something, is that a way, how do people, you know, we talk about active citizenship, participation in it. There's different ways that we can get involved. Some of us are on radio. Some of us write the articles. Some of us, you know, are active, you know, but some of us maybe can contribute funds towards people, to organizations that have credibility, that are doing that job. That is a form of active citizenship as well. How does someone become a member? If this talks to somebody, how do they support OUTER?
So, you know, thank you very much for that. OUTER, we don't have members per se. We have supporters. Mm. And so one of the ways that you can support OUTER is obviously by donating to us. Mm. And at www.outer.co.za, there's information about how to do that. And it's very important. We are, again, powered by the people. 95% of our funding comes from individuals and small businesses. 5% from a donor organizations or donor funding. So we can't do what we do without the mandate and support of the people. Mm. So we really do rely on that. But it's important also to know that when we speak about active citizenship, particularly in the context of OUTER, we're not talking about fighting against something.
Yes.
It's not about,
but
you know, pulling
it.
Something down. It's actually fighting for something.
Yes.
I like that. I love that.
I love that.
Because I think that often we do that. We focus on the negative, not on what we want it to be, to look like.
Absolutely.
Which is really what you're saying.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, we do want to see a prosperous country. Mm. But that is predicated on the removal of maladministration and corruption.
Yes.
And so we're doing that now. We're fighting that fight. But it was with the ultimate goal of seeing the South Africa that really we dream of for ourselves and our children.
You know, Howard, I spent a lot of time with OUTER over the past 2 or 3 months, and you cannot believe the things they do. And I think this new thought process of going in from the ground up, going into the local municipality and fixing it, you know. Now, you and me don't have time to go and do that.
No, no.
So by hitting the join now button and paying your $100 or whatever, maybe $10 if you like,
right.
But paying $100 means I know somebody at OUTER is fighting that fight for me.
100%.
And I think as an active citizen, it's the very least I can do.
Mm.
I want to do more, but I also have to work. So
right.
I would also like to walk
into
the municipality and say, why is the water so cold there?
Can I just ask you, just to be clear on this, what gives out the locus standi or the right to be able to do that? Is there some form of, you know, obviously the legitimacy is there, but I mean, on what basis can you do that?
Well, it really is on the basis of the support of the people. It's our supporters. And obviously as a non-profit public benefit organization, we work with other civil society organizations doing similar things.
Okay,
so there's a precedent's been set. We've got great organizations, Open Secrets in Cape Town, for example, and the National Convention of South Africa, civil society organizations that we work with. And so we find ourselves within that family of organizations. But ultimately it's the people. Now, if we, you know, if we have a cessation of support, we stop tomorrow. And so we are reliant on the support, but that gives us a mandate.
Absolutely. That is where we leave it. Absolutely fascinating. Time is 8:45. From our perspective, I think that, that you guys have done just an incredible amount of work. And as I started the interview by saying, I believe that OUT is one of the organizations, and there were a number of organizations and individuals who, as South Africans, we need to thank. We owe a great debt of gratitude to for fighting the corruption and for getting us to a point that we might not want to be at, but at least we're moving in the right direction. And I certainly would encourage people to go to the outer page, their site, and just to try and give some support, no matter how big or small. Heinrich Vollmick, thank you for taking the time to chat to us, and just keep doing the amazing work that you do.
Thank you, Howard, and thank you for having me on the show again.